You've made it through another week without me. Congratulations! The long, dry thirst for occult Hollywood knowledge is now over, for it is a brand new episode of the Femme Fatale podcast. Woo! Welcome to it. Welcome to the 33rd installment of my show. Now, when I tell you, the listeners, that I build my whole show around you and your questions about how entertainment really works, that's not an exaggeration. Every question I answer comes from you via email or Twitter or Facebook or what have you that the kids are typing into. And even my guest co-host selection process is yours to command. For example, this week, a Twitter follower who goes by Cocaine Sex Dream has complained that he didn't like Baby Vegas, but he does miss show regular Andy. And so this week I bring you Andy.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. Andy herself is so dedicated just to Cocaine Sex Dream that she dragged herself away from her baby and her dog over here for a day of work just to climb into the cage match with me and then recite reader questions aloud.
I thought Cocaine Sex Dream was a lady.
What made you think that Cocaine Sex Dream was a lady?
It didn't have a lady picture on it?
It might have, but I could have sworn that the name attached to that handle was Ethan. So I just assumed.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Yeah. But who knows?
But either way, Cocaine Sex Dream misses you. Cocaine Sex Dream has Cocaine Sex Dreams about you. And now you're here.
Great.
So anyway, welcome back, Andy. We missed you.
Thanks. It's been a while. I might be rusty.
That's okay. That's all the better to crush you in the cage match.
Oh, I'm not rusty in that department.
All right. Well, before I crush you, which I will, in one of my patented celebrity cage matches, let me tell you what I have coming up. A few episodes ago, we had Doug Jones on our show. And he was teasing us about a new super secret project he has coming up, something that may or may not have to do with an internet-born urban legend that rhymes with Blender Tan. Well, that super secret project has been announced, and one of my listeners has written in with a follow-up question. We're also going to get to the cage match later in the show, but before all that, let's get to the VIP interview this week. Just last week, Miley Cyrus announced that she's invited the Swedish dance sensation Iconopop to join her on her super feminist, all naked, all twerking world tour. So a couple of...
Is that like Lilith Fair, but the 2013 version?
Oh, it's the most feminist thing. I get it. I get it, girl. Your shit's naked, but still. I don't know. Do you think that she's a feminist?
I think I'm glad she thinks she is. That's, you know, at least a step in the right direction, but she's got a long way to go.
I mean, she says that the reason why she's a feminist is, quote, because I'm loud and funny and I'm not conventionally pretty. That in her definition...
The last part I've got a problem with, you know?
Makes her a feminist. You think that she's conventionally pretty?
She is conventionally pretty, yes.
I think she's a little wall-eyed.
And that doesn't mean you're a feminist if you're not conventionally pretty. Yeah, if that's saying all feminists are butt-ass ugly.
In other words,
really
she's
dumb.
Kind of backhandedly insulting feminists by saying you've got to be ugly to be a fem.
Yeah.
What are you doing there? I'm not sure that's not what she's saying. But I do think that there is a lot to question there about whether she's a feminist or not. I think you may believe in, I guess maybe it's about believing in your head that women and men should be equal, even if you are at the same time grinding your ass up on Beetlejuice live at the VMAs. As long as you're thinking feminist thoughts, that makes you a feminist.
You know, Beetlejuice cuddled with Noodle in the Park one time? That was
he
one of my
did?
Cage matches. Yeah, before he was Beetlejuice, like 2 years ago, maybe.
Wait a minute. You're talking about Robin Thicke. You're not talking about... Really?
He was a nice guy.
Really? Mm-hmm. Did he have the long hair back then?
No.
Was he with Paula Patton?
No, but he was with the kid, the bebe.
The bebe?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And he was... Is he cute in person?
Yeah, he was like really normal. He's like a guy you went to high school with that's, you know, pretty good looking.
Who just now wears Beetlejuice suits and lets Miley Cyrus grind up on his dioc. Okay. So anyway, my question. A couple of listeners have written in asking some questions about what it's like to be an opening act, especially considering that I recently reported that some of these baby superstars don't get paid anything to hit the road. In fact,
seriously?
Yes, in fact, there was a blind item recently on my blog about an act having to pay for the privilege of opening for a rising British pop act. Yes. So, as you may or may not know, Pat Benatar and her husband, Neil Giraldo, recently went on tour with Cheap Trick. And in case you're a blastocyst who does not know who Pat Benatar is, Google her. Anyway.
You think Baby Vegas knows?
If Baby Vegas knows who Pat Benatar is, I have hope for the world. Her opening act was a budding country rock star named Bryn Marie. So I got Bryn on the blower to talk about what it's really like to be an opening act and answer a couple reader questions while she was at it. Like, how do you put together a set list anyway? Have a listen to what she has to say. I interviewed her earlier this week. And take a listen to her music, too. Don't you know the story's just a word that I've already heard? All your excuses, all your lies. You can't talk your way out this time. Bryn Marie, welcome to the Femme Fatale podcast.
Hey, Leslie, I'm so happy. Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm happy just hearing your voice. So, I've hyped you up to my audience, but this is what I want to ask you first. Is the story of how you got to open for Pat Benatar is pretty crazy amazing. So why don't you start by sharing that, because it's a story that if you ever wonder how a mega act picks her opening act, sometimes it's more simple than you think. So share this story.
Well, I was given the opportunity to open for Pat and Neil in Conto, Oklahoma, and it was at a casino. And literally, I went in there just with, wow, this is like an amazing opportunity. I can't believe I'm able to do this. I really got to give it my all, you know, and just give it 100%. And that's what I did. I went in there with like this positive energy of like, wow, what a great opportunity. And this is my shot, you know, to have more people hear my music and stuff. And it was the coolest thing because during sound check, I was, you know, playing some songs, and next thing I know, after I was done, I heard clapping, and I like looked underneath the lights because they were so bright, and there was Pat and Neil sitting there, and they were clapping. I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe she's hearing this and she's hearing my music, and it was just an amazing moment. But after that, like we had the opportunity to chat a little bit. I told her about where I came from and my music and my goals, and we really just hit it off. And that's how all of this happened, like being able to be out on tour with her for a year was getting that one shot and just giving it my all.
And now here's what I understand. I think the other thing that people don't realize is when you get the chance to sort of open for a giant act, it's not, you know, gold chains and private jets and Kanye West coming to dinner at your house. Tell me how you get around. Yeah. Tell me how you got around. You recently did a whole tour then with Pat, because that's where that led. So how did you, tell me about how you got around and how you, what was it like day to day?
For me, you know, it was a choice of just being just an independent artist. You know, I wanted to be smart about how we got around, and I drove myself from city to city. I mean, there was some places where I took a flight because the time wouldn't allow me to drive. But literally, we took a minivan and we drove from Nashville all over the country. So it was really cool to do that. I mean, yeah, was there a lot of work? And I was consistently, you know, waking up every day, and we would drive 8 hours and we'd go perform and, you know, set up, tear down, and then pack the car and then head out to another city. So it was definitely challenging.
So how many hours of sleep do you get on the road then? Because if you're doing a show, then you pack up, you immediately get in the car, and you've got to drive to like Aspen, Colorado. I mean, how many hours of sleep are you getting?
Well, I guess it all just depends. I mean, every night varies. You know, no day is the same. Like any venue you go to, it's not going to be the same deal on every venue. You know, so. Adapting to change is, you know, I think it's key, especially being out on the road. But yeah, you kind of, when you get the chance to rest. And if not, like, luckily I was traveling with great people, you know, who was willing to take the wheel, you know, so I could sleep for a little bit. And so really it was great for me to have that support around me where we kind of wanted to take care of each other. So, but I tell you, I've seen so many cities and just beautiful landmarks that I never thought I'd be able to see. So it was an experience I'll never forget.
So I think, do people also assume that you're now like traveling, you know, with a different colored Birkin bag every day and like, you know, like Louboutin shoes and stuff like that? Like, do people assume that like, oh my God, she's made it now. Let's all meet at her private jet. Like, is that the reality, or what is the reality in terms of finances?
It's just making smart decisions. You know, I'd rather have a killer record than a pair of Louis Vuitton shoes.
Right.
But that's me. I'm happy in my UGG boots or my cowboy boots and heels or whatever, but like, it's just deciding what's more important, you know? And I think everybody kind of latches onto their own personal things, but mine is just, you know, being able to keep continuing to do what I love to do. So
now a bunch of my listeners have written in with questions. They're sort of varieties on the same question, which is about set lists and how you pick them. I know you finished your concert tour with Pat Benatar, and now you're opening for a country act right now, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that affect your set list? And I guess your set list also varies from city to city. So that just seems like a little bit of alchemy to me. Why don't you tell me about how that works?
Well, yeah. Like recently I've been out on the road with Craig Morgan and Joe Nichols, did a show with Gloriana. And, you know, when it comes to set list, I mean, I'm going to do what I do, you know, with who Brent Marie is, but I throw in a fun cover that everybody else knows, because, you know, I'll go out there and some people might not be familiar with my music, but if I throw a fun cover out there that I know that they know, it's just a way for them to be able to relate to me, you know, through a fun song, you know, or to get the crowd singing. And so I would say one of the smartest things to do, at least for me, what works for me, is picking a song that I know everybody can sing along to and getting the audience to become part of the show. And I think that's like key into like a great set.
So do you open with a cover? Do you close with a cover? How does that work?
Oh, I'll throw a cover in towards the end of the set. I definitely want to come out there with my songs up front, you know, so they don't get confused. You know, it's like, okay, here's all my music, here's who I am as an artist, and then here's a fun song let's all sing together, you know. So that's kind of the mindset, you know, that's in my head while making a set list.
And also, is there a flow to a good set, like in terms of pacing?
Definitely. Obviously, you want to come out with a song that, you know, your opening song, you want it to be like in their face. You know, it's your first impression on everybody. So to do that, and then, you know, just make it flow, like as an emotion. You know, I always think of it as like, I wouldn't want to put a ballad second, you know. I want to get the people up on their feet. I want to get them clapping and dancing. I want them to feel such a big energy and, like, then bring them down, you know, and then build them back up at the end. So just like any movie. I mean, it's like watching a movie sometimes. You know, you want to start with things being pretty interesting and then bring it down just a little bit, you know, where you can really feel something and let them have a moment to breathe. And then bring it back up with the energy and always leave them wanting more, you know, at least, you know, going for that goal. So, does that work for you?
That works for me. And I think the final question, the final question that one of my listeners had was really interesting. He said, look, has there ever been a time, and I'm just, you know, making this up as an example, where it's been like, Pat needs more lip gloss and, she's putting on more eyeliner and, you know, like we need a little bit more time. Can you like extend your set by like two more songs? Like, does that ever happen?
Oh yeah. Happens all the time. I mean, like I said, when you're doing a show, sometimes it's like, you know, you'll get cut a few songs. Even like instead of doing 8 songs, you're doing 6 songs because for whatever reason, or you're out there planning on doing 8 songs and the crowd loves you and they want you to come back out. So I always say, always play it safe. Like if you, like, especially for me, I will have my set list. And if I know that I need to cut a song, I already know prior to what song I would cut. And if I knew that we were going to come back out and do, you know, more songs, you know, I would have the bonus ones on the list as well. So just being prepared for anything, you know, just kind of going with the flow. I think it's so important.
Bryn Marie, thank you so much for joining me on the Femme Fatale podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and taking the time. This was really cool.
You say you don't know what you were thinking. Well, neither do I. After all the time we've had together, you think you deserve another try.
Boy, I don't know what it is. Now that we are back, I'm going to crush my co-host in the cage match arena. We haven't had a cage match in a while.
Really?
Actually, yeah. Mm. So my bloodlust is up. Of course, we can only fight metaphorically. And our only legal weapons are celebrity sightings and not, say, spike maces or my personal favorite, the siege tower. But I'm wasting time. Let's get to the cage match.
Am I first?
Do you want to be first? Bring your celebrity sighting into the arena. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That's you. There's no one else here.
I was waiting for the cat to say something.
I mean, we don't have groupies. The cat's going to... Go ahead.
So I saw this celebrity actually 2 weekends in a row in the same spot.
Okay.
At a little cafe in West Hollywood, sitting there, no makeup, early morning, having coffee with a male friend. The one, the only, Julie Delpy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I adore her.
Do you really?
I adore her.
Was she smoking cigarettes and being French?
She was inside, so she was not smoking cigarettes. Does she smoke cigarettes, you think? She might not. Oh. She might be a progressive French.
Oh, okay.
But she was just, you know, super casual, walked out of the place. I think she maybe lives in the neighborhood.
My husband like her. Mm-hmm. He like her. Mm-hmm. He saw her once too, though. So yeah, that makes your cage match a little less valuable in the wild. I'm just gonna dock points on that
because someone else has seen her in the wild. That's a new rule. I've never heard that before.
And welcome to the new rule. I think I'm just gonna crush you right now. You know what? Maybe I don't even need to say what my cage match is. I'm just gonna win.
You're gonna win anyway. But you might as well present your story.
All right. It comes from a spy, which I know.
Okay,
hold on. That means I know how it works, but it's not my friend Kim, and I'm allowed to do spies. It's just baby Vegas is not allowed to do spies.
Plus, also a new rule that I'm hearing for the first time.
Yeah, just you know, yeah. What are you gonna do? You can complain. You're gonna sit there and work for free. Up to you. Besides, my sound engineer is here, and he's gonna rule in my favor in just a second. So. Spy of mine working out of Albuquerque, working out of Duke City, early November, sees Matthew Broderick walk into a local cafe.
Okay.
It is an overpriced cafe in that it sells breakfast burritos for $8. I didn't think that was that bad. Like, I asked my spy, I'm like, that doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like a lot of avocado in that shit. And he's like, no, it's mostly potatoes. I'm like, okay, then that's not cool.
Well,
who was in there eating but Matthew Broderick?
Okay.
Who's in there doing, I think, a new flick for Neil LaBute. Now, this is where I win. My spy took a photo. And if you've got MP4 capability and you want to look at Matthew Broderick, who these days kind of looks like Bookworm from NPR.
What does Bookworm look like?
What's
his name?
Yeah, Michael Rosenblatt. You know, like what?
Silverblatt.
I'm sorry. Oh my God. My sound engineer does a perfect Michael Silverblatt. Where have I been? Damn. Hidden talents everywhere in LA. So anyway, he sort of looks to me the way Michael Silverblatt sounds.
I can imagine all of that. Yes.
If you have MP4 capability, you're looking at his photo right now.
Wait, is this a covert photo?
This is a covert photo.
Not like I'm going to go pose with him.
No. Of my spy seeing him.
Okay. Looking depressing.
Looking like the bookworm. So does that put me over the edge? Or because it was a spy, do I lose? Sound engineer, it's time to rule in my favor.
Can't give it to you. It's a carpetbagger sighting. It's like you're trundling someone else's experience over state lines.
Yes.
Ugh. Yes.
That's just because you want to fuck her. Yeah, you know you do. Just a little bit. Okay, so I went in my head. Okay, so here's our next listener question.
Okay.
Before I have Andy read it, some background. For our Halloween episode, which I'm sure Andy was just all over, I'm sure you can recite it by heart, can't you, Andy?
Yes.
Did you actually listen to my Halloween episode?
I might have missed the Halloween episode.
All right. We had a creature actor, Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. He's basically the Lon Chaney of the aughts. He played the Fawn in Pan's Labyrinth and all this. I had him on the show.
Mm.
One of my listeners asked him through the medium that is me whether he would ever do a movie based on Slender Man. Now, Slender Man is a fictional horror character created on the internets. It's a deliberate meme that was created collectively for fun. People got together and said, hey, let's, you know, create a creepy urban legend. And maybe we'll mat his image into Photoshop and talk about what he'd look like and make up stories about an attack and all this stuff.
Is he scary?
Yeah. He's scary. The way he's supposed to look is that he's a long, abnormally slender man with long, abnormally slender hands.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a featureless face and he's wearing a suit. And he's almost like Mothman. And like the more you think about him or believe in him, the more power he has over you to kill you.
How does he kill you?
I don't know whether he squeezes you with his long, beautiful hands or whether he sucks the life out of you. I can't tell you.
Okay.
Anyway, so a fan wrote in saying, hey, Doug Jones, you'd be perfect to play the Slender Man. Are you going to do it? Well, as it turns out, Doug Jones answered by saying, hey, I'm doing a movie, shot it over the summer. Can't say anything more than that. Well, since then, a project has been announced. Oh. With that background, Andy, read the next question.
Julia asks via the feedback module on the Femme Fatale website, can anyone claim copyright on the Slender Man, or is he the modern equivalent of the Jersey Devil?
Please tell me you know what the Jersey Devil is. It's like the Mothman from Jersey. It's like the Dover Demon.
I don't know what any of those things are.
You don't know what the Mothman is?
No.
Oh my God. It's a legend. It's an urban legend about a flying man with red eyes and no neck who terrorized West Virginia in the frickin' 60s.
Oh.
And it was all based on these tales of people saying they spotted him in this place and that place and to my window and I saw his eyeballs and you don't know about any of this?
Mm-mm.
And then he just disappeared into the night, never to be heard from again? Mm. Oh, what does it take to excite you? Look, despite his legendary qualities, the Slender Man is not in the public domain. Just because it was made up as a meme...
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it started on the internet. It does not mean he's in the public domain.
Really?
Yeah. There are several people who claim to have rights. Mm. There's a user named Victor Surge. His real name is Eric Knudsen. And he's widely acknowledged as the creator of this character. Mm. He was one of the first people to give him a face, give him a story, things like that. There are a couple other option holders, too, but their names are not necessarily out there.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is that, for example, several independent people have tried to make independent films about Slender Man through Kickstarter and other things, and they've been shut down quietly or otherwise.
By this original
by
guy,
by either the Mystery Man or a group of them.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that there are maybe three of them all together. But in a way, the question is moot because two things. One, Slender Man is not going to be called Slender Man in this upcoming movie.
What will he be called?
The Operator. Know? They're calling him the Operator. There are also some other differences. And the way I know this is because Doug Jones himself put up an announcement on their website, on his website. And this is what he said. The Operator is different in that he does not have tree branch hands. I guess Slender Man has tree branch hands. Nor does he abduct children in the forest as the Slender Man legend does.
Mm.
The Operator has his own unique powers, motivations, look, and agenda. All right, that's according to Doug Jones. However, Jones also said something else that was very interesting. The Operator is similar in look to Slender Man and absolutely inspired by him, even to the point that the Slender Man creator and rights holders are on board with their blessing and contractual credit.
Okay.
Here's what contractual credit means, and I can tell you what this means because I myself had an article optioned into a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It means that as part of the deal, I grant you the right to use my intellectual property to make a movie. In an exchange, you credit me as something in the movie. You give me a writer's credit based on a story by credit, created by credit, executive producer credit, whatever.
Do you get money for that credit?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were smart, they will have paid these people some money.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I'd be very surprised if they didn't. It's probably not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably somewhere in the five figures each. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if it was more than 30 grand a person.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know.
Okay.
It could be, you know, more than that and then split three ways. Either that, you know, or something like that. I would not be surprised. So that's kind of how it works. So when it comes to this kind of question, just because you create something on the internet and you create something collaboratively with other people does not mean that you don't own it. So if Hollywood comes to you and say, hey, I heard you have something about a flying sex koala that you guys have been creating, and we want to do Flying Sex Koala the movie and have a nice day, you say, no, Flying Sex Koala is mine.
Mm.
Stand up for your rights.
All right.
All right? Are you impressed, Andy?
Yes.
I never can tell when you're impressed. You're such a gentle talker.
Oh, thanks.
We have some extra time now on our show, and I think I need to discuss American Horror Story with you. I've been hate-watching that season.
Okay.
First of all, the Dutch angles are out of control. I feel like I'm having a stroke every time I look at them because they've got to have the camera at some weird angle for no, sometimes that's for no discernible reason. Mm-hmm. That's thing the first.
Okay.
Okay. Thing the second is the way that the characters always come to conclusions magically, not even literally, magically. Like, for example, in this past episode, the Farmiga actress, mm-hmm. you know, the one with the long hair and the blinking eyes, she comes to the conclusion that Madison Montgomery was murdered and not by the Tea Party man living in
the attic. Was kind of ridiculous.
And she just leaps to that conclusion kind of out of nowhere, not using a power or anything. She just decides that even though one of the other girls who can read minds has read this man's mind and he's confessed to the crime, suddenly maybe he hasn't. And that's the only logic she has. I bet you he didn't.
Okay, I'll give you that. That entire time scene on this show was ridiculous.
It was.
But it's been a good season.
Why?
Precious is awesome. Kathy Bates is awesome. True. Kathy Lang is on fire.
Who, Jessica Lang?
Jessica Lang, sorry.
Is on fire. Yeah.
She's like amazing.
Do you you don't think that Angela Bassett's character is a bit cartoonish?
No, she's also on fire.
You think she's on fire, yes. Not a cartoon?
In a good way. Is she a cartoon? She's on a little fire. Bit cartoonish, on fire, but amazing.
You think?
Yeah, I really like her.
So it's the acting that you like?
Yes, the acting is great.
Because the writing just feels so lazy.
I like that it's not as disgusting as last season.
Okay. It's not as physically gross.
Yeah.
You're not into that?
No.
Okay.
I think, no, the writing's pretty funny. The plots are a little lazy, I'll give you that. But the writing's pretty good.
Madison Montgomery wakes up out of being dead and says, I need a cigarette. That's
that
just
was
like.
Weak. I know. That wasn't a good line.
It's like, here, let me throw you another softball, guys. I mean, I'm.
Yeah. Precious has some really good lines.
Precious does have some really good lines. Uh-huh. I do agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Paulson's also great.
You think so?
She cuddled with Noodle one time also.
I know she cuddled with. I think that should. That is, by the way, the measuring stick, the yardstick uh-huh. by which we decide whether a celebrity is worthy of your time and money.
True.
If that celebrity blows off Noodle.
Which only one celebrity really has.
That was Timberlake, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, then we're just never going to. I'm not buying the 2020 experience. Never. Out of loyalty.
Thank you. Noodle appreciates that act.
So I want other people to write to us either via Twitter or Facebook or via the feedback module on my site and tell me whether you think that this is the best season of American Horror Story.
Wait, I didn't say it's the best season.
I know. You think? Well, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that that's what you're saying. I'm not putting words in your mouth.
I'm saying it's good.
Although that would be an awesome witch power. but you're saying that it's better than last season, yes. But not as good as the season before that.
So far, yes.
All right. This has been another edition of my show. Andy, do you remember how the kids can reach me?
No.
Oh, God.
I haven't been here in months.
You old. Okay, then I'm just going to do it and pretend that you did it. And pretend that I actually, I'm going to pretend that I have a co-host.
Okay.
No, hold on. I'll do it.
Okay.
You can tweet me at Fame Fatale Says. You can find me on Facebook. Or you can go to www.thefamefatale.com. There's a handy feedback module you'd make with the typey-typey in there, and it comes to me. Ask me any question about how Hollywood works, and I will do my best to answer it. Now, how about you? Where can they reach you?
I'm on Twitter at SoyNugget.
Yes.
That's it for now, really.
Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Bye.